Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and how the tech are ya? Y'all, I am in the studio recording today, which means that super producer Tari is actually listening on the cans right now across the room from me in the control room. This is the first time we've done this, possibly since the pandemic. It has been a while, y'all. And already, Tari is making her presence felt on this show, largely by suggesting numerous inappropriate titles for the episode. So her assistance, as always, is invaluable. Anyway, what we are going to talk about first is that, well, you know, around this time of year, you can count on a few things. Here in the United States, for example, folks are already obsessing over Halloween. Honestly, with my friends list, that actually started last month. Pumpkin spice flavors have made their way into pretty much everything you are able to eat or drink at this point. And also, you know that if it's this time of year, Apple's going to hold an event highlighting the next generation iPhone. This is where Tari's suggestions for titles came in. Because technically, they showed off the iPhone 15. But Tari says it's more like they reintroduced the iPhone 14. Or maybe the iPhone 15 is really iPhone 14A or Part 2 or something like that. This already gives you a hint as to how certain Apple devotees are feeling toward the Apple 15. So what is different? Well, there is one big difference. And that is that this is the first iPhone to have the USB-C charging port. This was a change that Apple had to make because the EU government has mandated that all smartphones, as well as several other digital devices, are going to have to adopt the USB-C standard for charging. And that means that people will be able to use the same USB-C cables to charge their stuff rather than have to hunt between two or three different kinds of cables with different connectors. Now, that's not to say that all USB-C cables are equal. They're not. So there still can be some cable confusion, but less so than there would be if you've got like five different proprietary connectors or whatever. Also, Apple announced that the Dynamic Island feature, which previously was only available on the iPhone 14 Pro and the iPhone 14 Pro Max, is actually going to be on all the iPhone 15 models. So there's one difference, Tari. You get your Dynamic Island, you know, that little black oval at the top of the screen that gives you your notifications. So, you know, I don't know what you're complaining about. USB-C port, Dynamic Island? Sounds to me like you guys are getting tons of upgrades. Anyway, there are two broad versions of the basic iPhone 15. The base model has a screen that measures 6.1 inches on the diagonal. That one starts at $799. Then you have the iPhone 15 Plus, which is a little bit bigger. It's 6.7 inches, and it will start at $899. Then you've also got the Pro and the Pro Max models as well. These will have the A17 Pro processor. The iPhone 15 will have the A16, which was what you saw on the i14 Pro. A17 Pro processor. The iPhone 15 Pro Max has a 48 megapixel camera and a 5x telephoto lens. So there's that as well. The Pro starts at $999. The Pro Max starts at $1,199. All of these phones will be available for pre-order starting tomorrow. Apple also had updates to some other product lines like AirPods and the Apple Watch. I think for the most part, we just saw sort of incremental changes in this update, apart from that migration to USB-C, which is pretty... That's a pretty big thing, but everything else was a kind of smaller innovation or incremental improvement. But you also have to realize that the smartphone is a mature technology at this point, right? It's been around for, you know, more than a decade. So it's hard to imagine coming out with something that's significantly different from what we're already used to. Doesn't mean it's impossible, but as technology form factors mature, it's less realistic to expect huge updates and innovations in them. They still can happen, but they're fairly rare. Yesterday, U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer hosted an Insight Forum focusing on artificial intelligence. Among the attendees were the CEOs of Meta, Microsoft, Google, and OpenAI. Plus, you had Elon Musk there, and the president of NVIDIA was there too. The event happened behind closed doors and no media was invited. However, some of the executives gave like a statement after the meeting was over. And not surprisingly, most of these executives were calling for a, you know, methodical and careful approach toward legislation and regulation. Now, they argue that AI has enormous potential to benefit, you know, business and society, and warning that if the government is a little too strict with regulations, this can stifle innovation. It's an argument we have heard before. But one dissenting voice was Elon Musk. Musk actually said that a federal oversight committee or agency would be appropriate, like to have a part of the government specifically to oversee AI development and deployment. He argued that companies don't really have an incentive to run AI projects responsibly if you don't have these sorts of constraints. And I kind of agree with him. We have seen time and again that in the absence of regulations, companies will take advantage of the very long leash they are allowed to be on. And this can lead to consequences that then we have to handle. And far too late, then the government will step in to do something about it. According to Schumer, the purpose of the meeting was for members of the U.S. government to gain a better understanding around AI, you know, what it is, what it can do, what the potential risks are, what are the benefits, and that is also understandable. While I cover tech for a living, and I have a decent, but by no means exhaustive, understanding of artificial intelligence, it can be easy to develop a view of the technology that's far too specific and far too narrow, or to just have a totally mistaken concept of what AI is all about. Schumer was quick to point out that this forum was to help educate leaders and that any legislation that follows will take some time to draft and then to amend and then to vote into law. So really, this was just an early step in the process. We shouldn't expect to see AI legislation roll out anytime soon. I've got some more updates on the cybersecurity issue that has severely impacted MGM Resorts. So in case you missed this news, on Monday, properties belonging to the company MGM Resorts in cities like Las Vegas, Atlantic City, Detroit, and others started to encounter massive computer system problems. Those problems shut down many, but not all, of the slot machines in some of these casinos. They took ATMs offline. They forced MGM to replace their normal website with a new landing page directing people to contact resorts by phone for stuff like reservations and that kind of thing. And lots more other issues. And we can't be sure how extensive these attacks were or what other systems could be affected. In fact, we don't even know for a fact that it's an attack, or at least MGM Resorts has not come out and said that explicitly. We don't know if the issue has impacted customer data. Personally, I'm very interested in that because literally a couple of hours before all this happened, I made a ding-dang reservation at an MGM property for an upcoming work trip. Come on. Anyway, at first, a cybersecurity research group called VX Underground posted a message on X, you know, formerly known as Twitter, that claimed a Russian-based hacker group known as Black Cat, also known as Alpha, except it's spelled A-L-P-H-V, that this group was behind the attack. And further, according to this research group, the hackers gained access through the old-fashioned and tried-and-true method of social engineering. They allegedly called someone in IT and they got access to the system that way. However, more recent reports mention a different hacker group as being responsible for the attack, or perhaps working in collusion with Alpha. This other group is called Scattered Spider, and hackers in that group are mostly located in places like the United States and the United Kingdom. The general consensus is that this is a ransomware attack, though again, MGM Resorts has not yet commented on that. And interestingly, it appears as though Caesars Entertainment, which also owns multiple casinos and resorts, was attacked by this very same group a few weeks ago. And according to some unnamed sources, the company agreed to pay millions of dollars in ransom to regain control of their systems. And if that's true, the company has yet to disclose that attack. And I feel that if, in fact, it is true that Caesars Entertainment was attacked a few weeks ago, MGM Resorts executives are going to be seeing red because they might feel that maybe had they known about the attack on Caesars, they might have been better prepared for the one that hit them. Now, anyway, apparently the rest of the story kind of fits what VX Underground reported, that hackers seemingly got access through social engineering, although the most recent account says that they targeted a third-party IT vendor and got access through them. And this is really bonkers because presumably these IT professionals should be on the lookout for social engineering attacks. Anyway, it really hammers home that people tend to be the weakest link in security systems and that companies are justified in educating and testing their employees regarding cybersecurity practices. And good golly, on a selfish level, I sure hope this is sorted out by the time I head to Vegas next week. Also, paying ransoms is a bad idea. Companies should not do that because paying a ransom sends the message that the attack wasn't just successful, it was profitable. And that means you get more attacks in the future. Okay, while I regain my composure, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We're back. As I mentioned in Tuesday's episode, Google is on trial this week. The U.S. Department of Justice has accused Google of engaging in non-competitive practices, using the company's dominant position in web search to stifle any potential competition. And according to the DOJ, part of those efforts include paying billions of dollars a year to smartphone companies and web browser companies to make Google the default search engine on those devices and browsers. The DOJ says that Google spends around $10 billion a year in payments to companies like Samsung and Apple and Mozilla and others for the privilege of Google search being the default go-to search engine, and that this prevents any other company from having a fair shot. Now, we're still in the very early stages of this trial, and there's no telling where it will go. For one thing, another news article revealed that the judge in this case, Amit Mehta, may not have a really strong grasp of the tech being discussed. According to Ars Technica, Mehta has asked if Mozilla is a browser or a search engine, which I get it. If you're not, you know, using this stuff a lot and you're not covering the world of tech, you might not know what Mozilla is, but it could mean that this could be a particularly complicated case for the judge to preside over. And as you might imagine, Google's lawyers say that the company really hasn't done anything wrong and that it just makes a superior product, and that's why it has a dominant position in the market. It's not that they have acted unfairly to get and hold that position, but rather that no one else makes stuff that's as good as Google does. A paper just published in the Journal of Autism and Developmental Disorders lays out a case that TikTok videos covering autism have information that is, quote, not aligned with the current scientific understanding of autism, end quote. This is according to Eric Dolan of SciPost.org. So the researchers created a brand new TikTok account because they wanted to make sure that they didn't have any algorithmic bias if they used an already existing account. So brand new account. Then they started searching for videos and they used the search query hashtag autism. They then weeded out things like duplicate videos. So if it showed up more than once, they would eliminate the extras. They eliminated any videos from non-English speaking hosts. They took those out too. They also got rid of any videos that didn't cover autism, but were showing up in search results. And what they had left once they did that initial culling was 365 videos, one for every day of the year. They then went further and they continued to weed out videos. They took out ones that were more about a person's experience with autism, you know, kind of like life story stuff. And they wanted to focus solely on videos that were claiming to be educational or informational. to be providing information about autism. They wanted to just focus on those. This got them down to 133 videos. Then they started to really look at these videos and compare them against the body of accepted scientific knowledge surrounding autism to see how accurate they were. They would label videos as being inaccurate, containing overgeneralizations, or being accurate, right? They would look and say, which of these does this fit? Or how many instances are we finding per video? They would also only label a video inaccurate if something in the video clearly contradicted accepted scientific knowledge. So they wanted to be as fair as possible in this approach. Even with all those steps, they found that 73% of those 133 videos contained at least some inaccurate information or overgeneralized claims regarding autism. They also noted that these videos get a lot of views. Like, the 133 videos collectively accounted for nearly 200 million views. And while the medical professionals who were hosting videos were more likely to get things correct, they weren't necessarily the most viewed videos. There were other content creators, either those who claimed to have autism or to be a caregiver for someone with autism, that were giving information that just wasn't scientifically correct, or at least not in agreement with the scientific consensus on autism. So the researchers are actually suggesting that TikTok works to create a space where people who want to talk about autism and talk about their life experiences and that sort of thing, that they have a space where they can do that, but that that space is separate from discussions that are about the scientific understanding of autism, to try and minimize the dissemination of misinformation about autism. They said that it's good to have the platform to expand people's understanding of autism and to reduce stigma. That's good. What we don't want to do is to fuel misinformation. So I think it was actually a pretty, measured approach outlined in the paper. The study itself is called The Reach and Accuracy of Information on Autism on TikTok. The Verge reports that TikTok has started to include excerpts from and links to Wikipedia articles in your search results. This seems to follow the trend of younger people treating TikTok as a search engine, which I still have to wrap my mind around because I'm old. The Verge reached out to TikTok, and a spokesperson confirmed that the platform has partnered with Wikipedia and that, in fact, this feature has actually been live for several weeks. It's just been gradually rolling out. And TikTok didn't make a big old fuss about it. They just kind of let it roll out. Now, I do not use TikTok, so I have not seen this in action myself. But apparently, the Wikipedia stuff appears between videos in your search results. So you search for something, you scroll down, and in between video like 4 and 5, there might be a Wikipedia excerpt or link there. And it's not universal. You're not guaranteed to see Wikipedia content connected to any and every search. Some topics appear to have Wikipedia entries included, and others don't. TikTok is also plopping down videos from sponsors in between those search results. So it sounds like using TikTok is starting to become more like using a regular web search engine. You know, you get some excerpts, you get some summaries, you get some links to the stuff you are actually looking for, and you get a whole bunch of sponsored content peppered throughout. Fun times. A high-profile Russian journalist and publisher named Galina Timchenko revealed this week that her iPhone was compromised by the NSO Group's spyware product Pegasus earlier this year. So in case you need a refresher, Pegasus is a piece of software that lets someone send an iMessage to a target iPhone or iOS device. And because of a flaw in Apple's software, this message would compromise that target device and turn it into a surveillance gadget. The attacker could activate the device's camera and its microphone remotely so you can spy using a person's own phone. You can also like search stuff that's in the phone's memory and essentially access all of its contents. Anyway, according to Medusa, that's a news outlet that Galina Timchenko co-founded, someone used Pegasus to infiltrate Timchenko's phone just a few hours before she was scheduled to meet with exiled members of Russia's media in a meeting in Berlin. Medusa says this is the first confirmed case of a Russian journalist being the target of a Pegasus attack, which isn't a surprise. The NSO group says that the tool, the Pegasus tool, will not work on phone numbers from the United States or from Russia. And they won't do business with Russia, and Russia won't do business with them, largely because Russia believes in funding their own spyware technologies. They don't outsource it. They build that stuff themselves. So anyway, NSO Group has said that Pegasus was intended for people to use to, you know, identify and surveil like terrorists and other dangerous people. But we've seen time and again that NSO Group's customers have been using Pegasus to really spy on anybody they don't like. And that includes journalists and activists and, you know, other politicians, that sort of stuff, not active threats against the state. And so NSO Group's claims that it's kind of innocent of all these issues fall on deaf ears for me anyway, because I think it's pretty clear their customers include some very not nice people who are using this tool to spy on folks who are not an active, like, threat, existential threat to the state. So yeah, still no word exactly on who might have been responsible for this attack. You know, the thought is that it probably wasn't Russia, but it's hard to say. Or if it was Russia, the attack was carried out through an intermediary of some sort. So yeah, no telling who it was that directed the attack on Galina Timchenko. But yeah, it's a continuing issue and now has affected a Russian journalist. She joins the ranks. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, I've got a few more news stories to cover.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, let's wrap up with some more news stories. This is a big one. So there's this rumbling over in the video game development world, and I don't mean the little motors that cause game controllers to vibrate. There's a company that's called Unity, right? They make a popular game engine, the Unity Engine. And this company has announced a big change in its subscription tiers that has upset a lot of developers. So the way this used to work is that as a developer, you would subscribe to a tier of service with Unity. And in return, you would get access to the Unity engine and you would get a suite of editing tools. And that was it. You would pay the subscription, that would give you access, and you went on your merry way. There were no royalty fees you had to worry about. In fact, if you were a really small developer, let's say that you made less than $100,000 per month in revenue, well, then you would get no fees at all to subscribe to the personal tier, the lowest tier of service of Unity Engine. However, now Unity has announced that starting next year, the company will charge developers a certain amount per install once a title reaches a particular threshold. So for example, let's say you're an independent game developer and you have subscribed to that Unity personal tier, the lowest tier. You will have to fork over 20 cents per install, not per sale, per install of your game once you have hit $200,000 in annual revenue or you have hit an install base of 200,000 players for that game. For customers who are paying more money for a higher tier of service, they'll actually see a lower per install fee and a higher threshold they have to meet before they have to pay it. So, in other words, if you're paying more money for a higher subscription tier, you're paying fewer royalties or less amount of royalties, at least on a per install basis. So developers got really, really upset. Some of them called out to the developer community to stop using Unity Engine full stop. Just don't use Unity, use something else. And they have accused Unity of pulling sort of a bait and switch routine, which got companies invested in using the Unity engine. And then they had the rug pulled out from under them with this change in policy. One developer, Megacrit, which produced the game Slay the Spire, posted a message that said its next game, which has already been in development for 2 years, will actually migrate to a different game engine if Unity does not change its policy. That's a heck of a thing to say you're willing to throw away essentially 2 years of work in order to switch over. They also posted the statement, quote, "We have never made a public statement before. That is how badly you effed up," end quote. Only they didn't use the word effed, if you catch my drift. Eurogamer reports that Unity executives sold off thousands of their shares in the company earlier this year, which some might interpret as the executives knowing that this change would likely lead to a decline in Unity's share price. It certainly looks suspicious considering the timing. In fact, the CEO of the company has sold more than 50,000 shares this year. He has bought no shares in his company this year. 2,000 of those transactions, or those shares, I should say, were done just last week. Unity has now backtracked a little bit on this policy. They are now saying that the charges will only come after a user has first installed the title. And that's it. Just the first time. The reason for that is that some developers were concerned that users who are particularly angry at a developer could potentially install, then uninstall, then reinstall a game many, many, many times. And if there's a charge for every install, it means that these trollish gamers can install bomb a developer. If the developer has to pay for every single install above a certain threshold, that could bleed them dry. So now Unity is saying, okay, it only counts the first time you install it on a device. However, we are still going to count it for every device they install it on. So if they have like 15 devices and they install the game on all 15, that counts 15 times. But it won't count if they delete it and then reinstall it. That should be done. Anyway, developers are not mollified by this, so I expect we're going to see a lot more conversation around this moving forward in the video game space. The Wall Street Journal reports that SpaceX's Starlink division is underperforming, at least from a business perspective, based upon what the company had previously projected. So the Wall Street Journal says that back in 2015, SpaceX presented potential investors in Starlink with a pitch, And they said that by 2022, Starlink would have 20 million subscribers and would generate close to $12 billion in revenue and around $7 billion in profit. Now, obviously, this pitch was designed to convince investors to invest money into SpaceX's coffers, right? Like, that's the whole purpose of it. But then how well did the company deliver on these estimations? Well, again, according to the Wall Street Journal, 2022 revenues for Starlink were $1.4 billion. Now, don't get me wrong. $1.4 billion is a lot of money, and it was a big jump from 2021. In 2021, Starlink made $222 million. So $1.4 billion is a lot of money, but as impressive as $1.4 billion is, it falls pretty darn short of the $12 billion that SpaceX was projecting back in 2015. Also, the journal reports that the service has more than a million customers. According to SpaceX VP Jonathan Hofeller, it's like 1.5 million customers worldwide. But again, back in 2015, SpaceX was saying they estimated that they would have 20 million customers by now, not 1.5. So it does sound like the division is going to potentially turn out a profit this year, so that's good, but it's not performing up to the estimates that investors were being told back in 2015, and I don't know how they're going to feel about that. And finally, astronomers have analyzed data gathered by the James Webb Space Telescope and discovered that an exoplanet called K2-18b has some interesting signs that could potentially mean the planet might support life, or maybe supported life in the past. Now, before we get too excited, let's try and be calm and rational. So this planet is in the so-called Goldilocks zone around its home star. So that means it's not too far out from the star to receive too little energy to support life, and it's not too close to its star where the radiation from the star would burn away any life that could be on the planet. It's in the zone that's just right, the Goldilocks zone. So theoretically, it should be receiving the right amount of energy to sustain life, at least life as we are familiar with it. Now, on top of that, according to the data that the scientists studied, the planet's atmosphere includes carbon dioxide and methane in it, and also a whole lot of hydrogen. Plus, the scientists say they believe there could be signs of another molecule, this one called dimethyl sulfide. So here on Earth, the stuff that produces dimethyl sulfide is life, specifically like microbial life, like phytoplankton, that kind of stuff. So again, this points to the possibility that there is life on this other planet. K2-18b is much bigger than the Earth is, more than 8 times as large as the Earth. It's also 110 light years away, so we're not going to pop by to borrow a cup of sugar anytime soon, but still pretty darn exciting. And that's it for this episode of Tech Stuff. I hope you are all well. As I said, pretty soon I'm going to be traveling for work. I'm going to continue to bring episodes. Next week, we're going to have an interview with someone from Surf Air Mobility, a company that is looking to be a pioneer in the regional air mobility space. It's a really interesting conversation. That's on Monday, so check that out. Tuesday, I believe we've got another Smart Talks with IBM episode, I think. I don't have my calendar pulled up, but I think that happens on Tuesday. But you should also get some more new episodes throughout the week, I hope, assuming everything's going well. And we're going to have a whole bunch of weird stuff coming out soon, because I'm going all the way out to Las Vegas to record a show and then cover Mobile World Congress and then come back home. So here's hoping that goes well. Here's hoping MGM Resorts has cleared away the problems by the time I get there. From a purely selfish level, I mean, I want it to be solved because I'm sure the people working for MGM Resorts right now are at their wits' end. It has to be really stressful, I imagine. So I hope that's all been cleared up. And I hope, again, that you are all well out there, and I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.